Om Namo Parvati Vasudevaya. Om Namo Parvati Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text number 2, chapter 5. Yad rupam yad adhishtanam yatak shrishtam idam prabho idam prabho yat samstam yat padam yat cha tat tatvam vada tatvataha yad rupam yad adhishtanam yatat shrishtam idam prabho yat samstam yat param yat cha tat tatvam vada tatvataha. Okay. Yat. What? Rupam. The symptoms of manifestation. Yat. What? Adishtanam. Background. Yataha. From where? Srishtam. Created. Idam. This world. Prabho. O my father. Yat. In which? Samstam. Conserved. Yat. What? Param. Under control. Yat. What are? Cha. And. Tat. Of this. Tatvam. The symptoms. Vada, please describe. Tatvataha, factually. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear Father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? Purport. The inquiries by Narada Muni on the basis of factual cause and effect appear very reasonable. The atheist, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. The manifested world, as well as the spiritual world, is still unexplained by the godless atheists through the medium of experimental knowledge, although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. Contrary to such mental speculative theories of creation, however, Narada Muni wanted to know all the facts of creation in truth, and not by theories. Transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the supersoul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. In the phenomenal world, three things are factually observed by any intelligent man: the living beings, the manifest world, and the ultimate control over them. The intelligent man can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world are creations of chance. The symmetry of creation and its regulative actions and reactions suggest the plan of an intelligent brain behind them. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. Prabhupada is distinguishing here between opinion and fact. We want to know the truth scientifically. As Narada is inquiring systematically, scientifically, he wants to clarify what are the facts. Not just some vague impression or opinion or theory about reality. He wants to know what is actually true. Otherwise, spiritual endeavor is blind. Then it's based just on sentiment and fanaticism. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught, that, what is it? Philosophy without religion is dry speculation. Religion without philosophy is just sentiment. Modern world is very corrupted by the influence of irreligion. The four pillars of religion, cleanliness, austerity, truth, and what's the fourth? I can't even remember. Mercy. Mercy, I didn't mention. So again, cleanliness, austerity, mercy, and truth. Three of those legs have been completely destroyed. Kali Yuga, there is very little to be found of cleanliness. Everything is unclean. You may be clean in your house, but if you step out in the street, you're contaminated immediately. If you breathe the air, you may be vegetarian, but down the street they're cooking meat, and you're breathing that, you know, smoke with the particles of meat and fat. You're breathing it. It's entering your body. So what kind of vegetarian are you anyway? Where everything is contaminated in this age. Even if we don't put anything in our mouth, it's entering our body just by breathing. All the contamination. We share the air with everybody else. We're breathing out, you know, our lungs are emptying out every few seconds, and we're breathing in dirty air from somebody else's lungs constantly. And everything they cook and everything that's floating in the air, all the exhaust from everybody's automobiles and factories, we're breathing it. So we're full of contamination, even physically. What to speak of psychologically, mentally, what kind of contamination we have. Just by being, living in this atmosphere of propaganda for sense gratification and atheism, how much nonsense is bombarding our brains. If you've grown up watching television or, you know, exposed to the modern propaganda for unlimited sense gratification and so-called prosperity. So we're very contaminated. In Kali Yuga, only one leg of religion is still respected, and that is truth. There's respect for the truth. That is our religion, science. Just like this gentleman, the president of India. His religion is science. And he wants to make that the state religion. This is the, you know, the goal of India for the future, is that India become a developed country. What does he mean by developed? Developed materially only. Like the other countries that have lost their own culture, lost whatever religious life they actually had, and they're just living like total animals. That's developed country. Developed in the direction of becoming cats and dogs. And he and others like him, want India to be like that too. Become another developed country. But we're trying to promote a different kind of development, spiritual development. Truth is respected, but it's respected in the material way. Science is the vanguard of truth. And in the modern world, there's a sharp division between science, three divisions. and there's inseparable boundaries among them. Science is real truth, hard facts. And there's philosophy. Philosophers just speculate. And then there's religion, where people just have their belief, their superstitions. So there's, complete separation from science and philosophy. Philosophy is the least promoted and funded department in every university. It's tolerated because there's a great ancient tradition of philosophy. But the philosophy department in every school is the least popular and the one that has the least money and is just barely surviving, the study of philosophy. And then religion is promoted because people are very, the living entity always has the urge to be in contact with the Supreme and to be able to take shelter of the Supreme. That is hard to get rid of. Even the communists and everybody who's making atheistic propaganda, they can't stop the urge of the common people to want to have a religious life. So religion is prospering. The churches, the religious institutions have plenty of money and support. But from the academic point of view, they're not respectable. They're not promoting truth, just superstition and belief. It wasn't always like that. Even in Europe, there wasn't always this division separating science from philosophy and philosophy from religion. If you went to the university in Europe before the 13th century AD, suppose you went to the University of Paris or Oxford, back in the early Middle Ages, all they taught was religion. Everything else was secondary. The whole faculty was faculty of theology. Only later on did philosophy become independent of religion. Only after the 13th and 14th century in Europe did secular philosophy, just on a speculative basis, not based on Shastra, not based on the Bible, did that become an independent pursuit. So departments of philosophy were set up. PhD, Doctor of Philosophy. That goes back to the middle of the Middle Ages. Before that, there was only Doctor of Theology. Then philosophy. The study of truth for its own sake, without any necessary connection with the idea of surrendering to the Supreme and becoming, developing love of God. It was separated from that. Truth for its own sake. That's the modern idea. And so the universities became schools of philosophy, or at least the philosophy departments became the popular departments. But then science became something separate from philosophy, because philosophy is just speculation, but science deals with hard facts. By experimental procedure, by logic, we establish what is definitely true, not just what is opinion or guesswork. Supposedly, that's the scientific method. The limit is that they're just studying the material phenomena, the outside of what is going on in the world. What is actually the dynamics of reality, that's material science cannot touch. Because material science does not explain the spirit soul. It does not explain consciousness. Natural science, mechanical science cannot explain that. The laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, and even modern biology, even modern psychology cannot describe, cannot define and explain consciousness, the living force. And actually, mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhutat sanatanaha manakshashtan indriyani prakritistani karshati. It is actually my special part and parcel, the living entity, the living soul, that is making this world move. Only because of consciousness does anything actually happen in this world. The planets are rotating in their orbits, not just because of the laws of physics. Okay, cars are driving on the left side of the road because that's the law of the country.
If you drive on the right side, you're driving illegally. That's the law. It's been established by the legislature. So why are the planets moving in their orbits? We say because of the laws of physics. But who enacted those laws? What makes them law? Actually, okay, who discovered? Kepler, Copernicus, Newton, Einstein. These men discovered the laws of physics by which we describe how the planets move in their orbits. But they didn't make the laws. They discovered the laws. The scientific laws are not law in the sense that the traffic law is law. Traffic law you'll find described in the Manusmriti, in the Dharma Shastras. So many things are described. The law, established by originally by the Supreme Lord, presented and explained by the great rishis, upheld by the great kings of human society. This is actual law. Traffic law is also part of it. In one chapter of the Manusmriti, there are descriptions of what to do if two, bullock carts come, on a one-lane road and they both approach one another, which one is supposed to give the right of way. What punishment someone should have if he be given, if he runs somebody over on the road with his vehicle. These are there. These are laws. But the laws, what we call scientific law, is not the same thing. Kepler and Copernicus figured out the mathematical explanation of the dynamics of how the planets are moving in their orbits. But they didn't legislate. They didn't create the law. Scientific law is just description, an attempt to explain. It's not law in the sense of what makes something, what you have to obey. There's no prescriptive force in what Newton or Kepler or Einstein said. It doesn't create the order of the universe. It just describes it. So the word law is being used in a different sense when we talk about scientific laws. They're just explanations. But what's the real law? What makes the planets move in their orbits? I don't just want to know how you can explain it mathematically, how you can predict by a mathematical equation when there's going to be the next lunar eclipse. That's okay, but that doesn't explain why the moon moves in that orbit. The answer must be that there's intelligence, that there is a moon god, Chandradev. And he's just like if there's a car driving down the road, I must presume that someone is driving it. The car is stopping at the red light and not driving off the road and running down the pedestrians. There must be a driver. I may not see him. Maybe it's a robot car or a remote control car, but someone is some intelligence is driving the car. Similarly, the moon is traveling in its orbit and staying within the limits of its orbit because there's an intelligent driver, the demigod. And that demigod is not independent. He's driving according to the law established by the Supreme. Yasya gyaya brahmati samvritta kala chakro govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The sun and the other planets are traveling in their orbits faithfully and accurately on the order of Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that you will not learn from this department of astrophysics. Mechanical science cannot tell you what is the real reason why things happen in this world. It's because of consciousness. And consciousness is directed by the Supreme Consciousness. The living entities who willingly submit to the control of the Supreme Consciousness, they are established as the controllers of this world, demigods and brahmanas, those who are actually obedient to the law of God. They are the controllers and the teachers. The demigods are controllers, like a king, a kshatriya is a controller. And the sages and the brahmanas, they are the teachers and the explainers. The dual function, Brahminical and Kshatriya, that is also there in the overall management of the universe. The managers and the teachers are there, the demigods and the sages. They are the ones who actually agree to submit to the control of the Supreme. And those who are foolish and either ignore the control of the Supreme, more or less, or deny the control of the Supreme, they are put under they're forced to be controlled by these controllers. But everybody is serving. Everybody is subordinate, either willingly or unwillingly. Those who are rebellious, they're put under restriction. Just like criminals are arrested by the state and put in jail, where they are fed and given some place to stay, but under severe restrictions. They're in jail. They're maintained, but not nicely, and with severe restrictions on their freedom. They're locked up in jail. Similarly, all the rebellious living entities in this world who cannot voluntarily submit to the supremacy of the personality of Godhead, they're put under severe restrictions by the laws of karma. They are put in bodies that don't have freedom to do what they want. They only have, you know, a human body which cannot fly in the sky, which cannot travel from one planet to the other just by willpower. You know, you're born in a certain body. You're born in a family that's not very rich. You're not very educated. So you can't get a good job. You can't buy the nice things you see in the fancy stores because you don't have the money. You know, you're not free to do what you want because your wife is keeping you under control. We all have restrictions created by our prarabdha karma. We take birth in a body, in a social situation that puts restrictions on us. And the more we're rebellious, the more severe the restrictions are. If we become too rebellious, we're not even allowed to have a human body. We're put in an animal body where we're struggling for existence. And we have no freedom and not even intelligence to exercise the little freedom we have. So the restrictions are more and more serious the more and more we have rebelled. And we are relieved of restrictions the more and more we surrender to the Supreme or cooperate with the Supreme. This is material law. This is what Narada wants to understand. Not just a mathematical description of the superficial material dynamics of it. Not just, you know, what are the laws of physics. But I want to know the real law. Why does it happen? What really makes it all happen? Why do people suffer? Why are people not free to do what they want? Why are they bewildered? So these are the questions. This is what Narada is really getting at. Not that he's asking for a mechanical, mathematical, or speculative description of the universe. He wants to know the real dynamics. What happens and why? Why are we suffering? Why are we unhappy? Why are we confused? Narada is confused. He doesn't know who the real Supreme is. His father seems to be the Supreme. Now this is not a severe problem. He's a little bit unhappy and a little bit confused because he's not sure who the Supreme is. Most of us have more severe problems than that. We come to Krishna because our minds are disturbed, because we're being disturbed by other living beings and by our bodies. We're in pain, we're suffering, and therefore we approach Krishna, please relieve me from this suffering. Narada is firmly in the mode of goodness, so he's not suffering. But still he's not fully happy. He's not fully satisfied because he is in doubt about what is actually the situation of this world. Narada, he may not have been informed yet what his mission in life is. He's just young Narada, boy Narada, like a little boy, usually doesn't know what he's going to be when he grows up. You know, he wants to be a fireman or an air, airplane pilot. You know, but when he grows up, he'll realize what his real mission in life is. Narada also apparently doesn't know that he's going to be the world preacher, the next in line in the Sampradaya after Brahma. Doesn't know that yet, maybe. Maybe he has some sense of it. And therefore he's asking, you know, he knows that, or at least he has some inkling maybe, that he has to help the conditioned souls. So he has to understand then, what's wrong with these people in this world? Why are they not happy? What's the real situation here? Please describe factually the symptoms of this material world, manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And, most important, under whose control is all of this being done? Not asking it just because he wants information of how you can describe it, reduce it to mathematical formulas, and then manipulate it for some material purpose. That's not why he's asking. He's not asking so he can learn the dynamics of how the material world is engineered so that he can use it for material purposes. He's asking for spiritual purposes. Because his motive is purely spiritual, therefore Brahma will see in a few verses, his father Brahma is going to be very happy to reveal the spiritual essence of reality. And therefore, this is all being described in Srimad Bhagavatam. If Narada was someone just asking mundane questions, this conversation would never have been recorded in the Bhagavatam. In fact, Narada's inquiries, maybe this verse doesn't seem to get right to the point, but he's not done yet. This is just his first question. Let's see what questions he asks. It goes on for another 5 verses, I think. And we'll see that they're very much to the point, to the spiritual point. This is not a mundane inquiry. And therefore, Brahma responds by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. What Brahma speaks in this chapter, beginning from verse 11 of this chapter, through the end of chapter 7, is the 3-chapter version of Srimad Bhagavatam that was spoken by Brahma to Narada. Because Narada asked questions with a spiritual outlook, therefore Brahma is giving the spiritual answer. Brahma has other sons. Narada is the youngest son. His other sons also approached him for knowledge, material knowledge. Marichi and the others are karmis. So Brahma taught them the karmakanda process of Vedic sacrifice. He's already been through this with his older sons. But none of the other sons asked questions with a purely spiritual attitude. None of the other sons wanted to get to the essence of things. They were satisfied in how to perform sacrifice and go to heaven. How to be a good rishi. From the material point of view, also a material designation, a material occupation, to be a rishi. If you're just a karmakandi, then it's even being a great rishi, even son of Brahma, is also material. Only Narada is the perfect son who wants to know the real essence, the real purpose of life. So we'll be reading for the next few days his questions, and then we'll see what Brahma has to say as his answers. Okay, are there any questions or comments? No, not from you. Yes.
How are the shrutis and shrutis?
Yes. How they're classified? Shruti is eternal scripture. It is aparusheya. Nobody wrote it. The shruti exists eternally. It's just as the jivas are emanating from the Supreme Lord, but eternally. They're a coexistence with God. So the original Vedas, the Shruti, is co-eternal with God. It exists before the creation and is never changed. So one way that's the essence of what Shruti is. The way you can see what is Shruti is that when it's repeated, not one syllable can be changed. The Shruti, the original Shruti also has the swara, inflection, sound. And that swara must be preserved also. Not one syllable can be changed. Smriti, however, is secondary literature. And although it's based on Shruti, and the knowledge of it is perfect, it's presented by various sages, rishis, or other authors, faithfully according to the Vedic version, but they speak it in their own words. So they have, the Vedas have, the Smriti has authors. The Shruti doesn't have any author. And the Smriti, the Puranas or Smriti, in each age, the speakers of the Puranas may speak them in different words. The words can change. That's the difference. Smriti, the Shruti has no author and the words never change. Smriti have great sages and learned Brahmins as their authors, the Smritis. And the words can change, although the basic ideas are the same. The Puranas are supposed to be within the category of Shruti, but Srila Jiva Goswami reveals the confidential information about Srimad Bhagavatam in his Tattva Sandarbha that the Bhagavatam is actually Shruti. It is eternal. It wasn't written by Vyasadeva. Just like Vyasadeva did not write the Vedas, he only edited them. He also received the eternal Bhagavatam and he didn't change the words. Neither did Shukadeva change one word. It's preserved intact from time immemorial in the 18,000 verse form. Vyasadeva is not the author, he's just the transmitter of the Bhagavatam. It's also Shruti. Normally, Shruti consists of the Vedic Samhitas, the Brahmanas, which explain the Samhitas, the Aranyakas, which give more esoteric explanations, and the Upanishads. That's the traditional Shruti. But Bhagavatam is also Nigama Kalpa Taror Galitam. Nigama means Shruti. Agama is Smriti. Nigama is Shruti. Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree of the Shrutis. So Bhagavatam is the perfection, the cream of the original Vedas. It's not just secondary literature. Okay. Yes.
And Vidvangaranga. You said a few days back that animals, they don't have a language.
Okay. There's some crude resemblance of language among some animals.
But in Mahabharata and other literatures, we hear that sort of an animal spoke with some Brahmana.
Yes, that's unusual if an animal talks. That animal must be someone with human intelligence. He may be in an animal body, but he's been specially empowered because normal animals can't talk. They may have some crude form of communication, but human language is a much more complicated thing than any animal communication. Even the whales with all their whistles and the dolphins and the bees with their fancy dances. That's not on the level of human language. Human language is extremely complicated. No one has been able. Tens of thousands of Japanese scientists spending billions of dollars have not been able to teach any computer any human language. The Department of Human Resources? Dr. Manohar Joshi? What's his name? Here in India, the federal government is spending crores to also try to teach Sanskrit to computers. This is their new project. It can't be done. Nobody's been able yet to teach a computer any human language. It's too complicated. So animals normally can't talk. Even computers can't understand language. The fanciest computers can't do it. Nobody's been able to figure out how to program a real language into a computer. Maybe if I'm wrong, let me know. But as far as I know, natural language has never been properly emulated by any computer. Only some, small fraction of it, some imitation of it. If you read about an animal talking, it's some person with higher intelligence that happens to be in an animal body. A normal animal with animal intelligence can't understand language and can't talk. Okay? Hanuman is in a monkey body, but he's a great learned sage, actually. He can compose wonderful poetry, and he knows all the Vedas. He doesn't have animal intelligence. And even if some snake or somebody, some bird starts talking, it's some demigod or very learned person who happened to be put into that body of an animal. Okay? Thank you. Anything else?
They have intelligence to understand.
Yeah, rudimentary intelligence and even rudimentary communication. But it's vastly inferior to human language. And it's on a much lower level of complexity, any kind of animal communication. Animals have some sort of signals. So the science of semiotics studies communication in general. And you can have simple systems of communication, even among animals. But human language is much more extremely complicated. No animal brain can comprehend human language. No computer brain can do it. Not yet. Nobody's been able to program any real language into any computer.
But how about the birds, like parrot, they repeat what you say?
A tape recorder can also repeat. A tape recorder will also repeat. That's just mechanical. The animal doesn't know what he's saying. Okay, maybe chimpanzees can understand, 20 words or 30 words, or even a few phrases. Chimpanzees are almost human beings anyway. There are 400,000 species of human beings. The monkeys are supposed to be among those low, there's only one species of Homo sapiens. The other ones are the other simians are also within the 400,000 human species. So a chimpanzee, maybe he can understand a few words and even a few simple sentences. But that's the limit. Anything less than the chimpanzee, he can't even put two words together. Or can't even, a parrot can say words and phrases, but he doesn't know what they mean. You can teach the parrot, Prabhupada said, you can teach the parrot to chant Hare Krishna, but when you strangle him, he'll go squawk. He won't chant Hare Krishna at the time of death.
It chants on its own.
Yes?
It chants on its own also. Initially, it repeats, but later on...
That's very... maybe he'll go back to Godhead, but he doesn't know what he's chanting. He can go back to Godhead by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. He's chanting Krishna's names. But he's still ignorant. He still is not using human language.
As soon as he gets up in the morning, he chants Hare Krishna. And then he just opens the door, he looks at you...
Because there's spirit soul in there. The spirit soul is attracted. But he doesn't know what he's doing. Just like a little baby, maybe chanting also. He doesn't know what it is. Chanting and dancing. And then when he grows up, he wants to ride on a motorcycle and chase after girls instead. Yeah. So sometimes in ignorance a person is there's some shadow attachment, but it's not based on knowledge. So I don't think the parrot, you could say that he understands human language. Okay, I don't think scientists will disagree with that. They recognize the animals have only very, very limited intelligence, and the power of the human mind to communicate using real language is much more complex, millions of times more complex. Nobody, all the linguists and the computer programmers have not been able to figure out how to completely describe the process of human communication. It's too complex for anybody to figure out. And maybe they'll never figure it out. They can give some description, but never a complete description. An unambiguous, complete description of human language. Nobody's been able to do it. Okay. That was my, I was studying linguistics in school. I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, because when my spiritual master came, and some devotees and so walking in Kaban Park chanting.
Yes.
That's how our dog also was always following us.
Yes.
Kind of us. We were trying to drive away the dog, it was not going.
Yes.
And till the whole, he was going here and there, we were all going up and down, and the dog also following us.
Yes.
I can't understand.
Animals can have attraction. Animals have hearts, they have souls. So an animal can become attracted to devotees or even to God. We have, the temple elephants who become very devoted to the deities. Elephant is also a relatively intelligent animal. Attraction may be there, but not intelligent understanding.
We can understand that Aludhi is chanting the holy name. That much can understand.
That he's chanting the holy name?
Yeah, that animal, the dog could understand how it was just calling.
No, I don't think he can understand holy name. I don't think he can understand the concept holy or the concept of God. I don't think a dog can understand that. When we say holy name, we mean the name of God. And I don't think a dog can conceive of what God is. He may understand the person who feeds me. you know, as my master, you know. But beyond that, I don't think he can conceive of supreme master. I don't think so. I don't think any dog can do that. All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Peter, first I have to answer my question.
Yeah, your question.
No, it's not.
Okay, private question.
Yeah. Thank you.